Het is coronatijd, het is crisis. We skypen nu met Rubens Barrichello. Rubens, how are you? How is Brazil?
Hoe gaat het?
Het gaat goed. En met jou?
Prima.
Prima. Yeah.
That's what I learned when I went to driving, and it was 1989 when I met Jan Lammers, and he gave me a test in Zandvoort.
Very cold.
Very cold day, very windy, and I had the white cars, it was just my first touch with the Dutch people, which I fell in love. I have a lot of friends and a lot of fans over there, and so it's good to be talking to you.
Yeah, I remember that day, Rubens, by the way, because there was a very shy Brazilian kid almost coming to Europe to race, because I think at the time you were 17, right?
I think I was still 16.
16,
actually, because you remember when I started the season the next year, when I started the European Formula Opel Lotus, I had to use the license of my father. We can say that because now I was born on the same day with the same name as my father. So 23rd May. My father 1950 and I am 1972, but nobody checked the date, so I was okay.
So, I was looking at some of those pictures not long ago to digitalize that season. I think Dan Partel called it the youngest champion, but it was a good season actually, your first season in Europe. And the thing also I keep remembering is you had a teammate, José Luis de Palma, who is an Argentinian guy who I keep running into when we had the Dakar rally in South America, because he was doing that. So I keep going back to that year for some reason.
I believe you never met so much someone so crazy as De Palma, isn't it?
No. No, he was very crazy. Rubens, then you went, you know, you went from Formula 3, Formula 3000, and it all was pretty smooth in a way, and you were always destined for Formula 1. And still, I like, when you got there, like, you were like, I don't know how to describe it, you were happy, surprised, proud, all of it in once. I mean, you were this, like, this kid living his dream.
Yes, it was a... It was a dream coming true. It was almost, we can say that it was meant to be, because it was, things were happening. It was, so the kid with no money from Interlagos all of a sudden had a sponsor called Arisco, as you remember well. And the fact that my father, without any knowledge, made an offer to Arisco for them to try to sponsor me on a risk kind of clause, because if I got to Formula One, fine, they would be my partners for Formula One life for 25%. If not, then they would have risk and lost the money. So, and what made me so proud was that thing with what my father did was so nice, and with such a nice person that guy from Arisco never used a cent. He always donated to charity. And I, you know, the 25% that he got it back every year from me. So I think all in all, you know, he helped me a great deal, and we helped a lot of people with that. So,
yeah. And also, but you know, the reason I say this is, like, I remember, I think it was your first year, we went on a little scooter with a camera to your house. And I remember walking into your bedroom at your parents' house, which was still exactly like you left it when you came to Europe. Yeah. And it was like, that's why I say you were proud and you were happy, and you were, it's like, you know, this bubbly type of guy. You know what I mean?
I had a fantastic feeling you know, just the going through that straight in Interlagos with with that car that it was just over 700 horsepower and alongside all my people. So I really, really felt good.
Yeah. I was talking to Johnny Herbert not long ago, who says hi, by the way, who finished fourth in Donington 1993, which Ayrton's best first lap ever, going from fourth to lead that Grand Prix. But there was someone going from 12th on the grid to fourth after one lap. Yeah, so did we miss all of that?
It's amazing, isn't it? And now they are talking more and more about this, because I think there is a vote to see who had the best first lap in Donington, and of course the chief, Ayrton Senna, going from fourth to first. But you know, my first lap was incredible at the time. It was only my third race. At that race, I remember it was raining for the first time, and I said, "Oh, this is fantastic!" And I could see people not feeling that good because it was so dodgy, because it was wet, drying, and Donington, apart from everything, was drying out quite quickly in a way. So I had like seven pit stops, and I remember, you know, I even thought I lost a bit of my humble side, because at the time I was P2 on my dash that I could see on my, you know, the plate that they give us, and all of a sudden I had Ayrton behind me. I said, I'm P1. He must have had a pit stop, and he was lapping me. So for some time, I lost a bit of my thing.
Ayrton, for you, a friend, an idol, a hero, a mentor, all of that.
That's why when you say, you know, it was a happy Rubens, it was an easy Rubens, it was just everything, because I was happy being there. I had gratitude on my chest, because everything that my father was devoted to me and my whole family and the whole friends, and they helped me get there, and it was not just something that I conquered, it was something else. Running on the same track as Ayrton was just phenomenal. I had to pinch myself every time, because I felt that I had the best grandstand seats in the whole world. You know, it was when you come on the Formula One and you are 2 seconds slower because of your equipment than your idol. Sometimes you look in the mirror, it is Ayrton, and you just put your little finger and then go, and it was just phenomenal.
After that, you made your debut with Jordan, then you went to work with Jackie Stewart, who was like, he's not the youngest guy, he wasn't young then, but very sharp brain.
Yes, it was. He was two different persons in Eddie Jordan and Jackie Stewart, both very committed to what they want, but very different in the way they behave. And with Jackie, the very first day when I came in, he said, "I want you to dress well, and you gotta. There is a way to promote and to behave in front of the sponsors and the clients and so on." So he sent me to this guy, this tailor guy, and I still have that, because it's just amazing. He put me in really good shape. He sent me to learn how to pause myself and to speak to the press, and so he was ahead of his time.
Yeah.
And but then when we went to the racetrack, he never told me a thing, because he liked the way the docile that I had on, you know, the politeness that I had through the steering wheel, and the way that I behave with the front wheel, and the way that I was to the pedal with the rear wheel. He never said a thing, and he was super happy. We had such a great combination. And when I told him that I was I wanted to go to Ferrari, that I signed for Ferrari, he almost cried. So he was a father to something. So even now we still talk every year, every, you know, every birthday, every New Year's Eve, because we really had a connection there.
Yeah, because I think that, I mean, I spoke to Jackie about that one day, and I think he almost, he's proud that he has given you the chance to show yourself to go to Ferrari. He feels he's played a big part in you going there eventually.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that 99 car was, because people say, okay, why is the Williams where they are, or why did they have, because at the end of the day, it's not about the clock so many times in going further with an F1 team. Sometimes you go a tenth slower, but the new front wing has given you what you want from it. You just went slower because the track is hotter, because the wind changed direction. And if the boy that is there doesn't have the ability to foresee that, and if it just works on clock, then you get deviated on stuff. And that's why at Ferrari we had such a good combination, because Michael was super fast, super committed, super everything, but sometimes you would test items such as A, B, C, D, E, and F, and then test A again, and he would go faster on A again. So he was so committed, he would get used so easily to the problem of the car that you didn't know what was actually better or not. Well,
I work a lot with Kees van der Gint, who did all the Bridgestone tires when you were there.
Yeah.
He actually does say, which is something maybe you, Jackie, also realizes, you were easy on tires.
Yeah, but more than being easy on tires was to be able to define the tire for me, but also the tire for Michael.
Yeah.
Because you knew how they drove, so that's why so many times I was so fatigued, because they put into Mugello, oh, Rubens, you're gonna be here for the whole week testing Mugello by yourself, going to their Arrabbiatas every time and doing 600 kilometers. But it was the best times of my life.
Yeah, you wouldn't have won a miss. I mean, I think it was Hungary when you actually signed, or when around that time that you went to Ferrari, decision time, there was like this twinkle in your eyes. Like there was the Rubens who was the twinkle in his eyes when he got to Formula One, but getting to Ferrari was like something you never expected to happen.
Yeah, and it was a crazy time for Brazil with, missing Ayrton Senna, and it was the chance that I needed to have. And we know all the story. I mean, at the end of the day, I think Michael would have been champion so many times anyway, because he was super talented and everything. Maybe if I had a little bit more of a chance, I would have been champion in 2003, maybe even in some more years, maybe. But that doesn't matter, because I know how much I was devoted to that, and when I felt that I didn't have the chance anymore to have a prosper situation there, that was when I decided to leave 1 year before my contract was done.
And when Honda stopped, that was like a winter of nothing, and suddenly you have a championship-winning car.
Yes.
That must have been weird.
It was not just weird, but it was gratitude again on my heart, because it was a time in my career that I felt alone. Nobody believed me that I felt that I was going to drive. And my friends were telling me that I was crazy because I didn't have any money, and how they were going to contract me to pay me something, blah, blah, blah. And after 4 months, I was in this house when Ross Brawn called me and said, are you ready to come over? We're not going to do a contract for 16 races. We're going to go for every four races. Are you prepared for that? Because we need money. We don't know what's going to happen, but you are my favorite driver, and you're going to be here. So I had 4x4 signed contracts.
Yep.
And I was signed on a bonus thing, but the car was just so phenomenal that I... I was able to, you know, to fulfill my dreams. And unfortunately, I had a problem with the brakes early on that I couldn't use the wheel covers. And that gave me a little unbalanced situation compared to the normal car. And it took me 6 races to really get it done, because the cars were so good and so so well balanced at the time that if I qualify 0.001 behind Jensen after the start, it was almost gone, because cars like that, that they were so controlled by the aerodynamics.
Yeah.
When you have your teammates, when you follow your teammates, you lose everything of that.
Yeah.
You can follow other car and still lose it, but you lose in a less amount. It's just that in your situation, when you turn to the corner, you follow exactly the same car, kind of. You just, it was hard to pass and it was hard to do things. So I end up not winning the first 6 races like Jensen did, and it became like late. But I was still proud to win Valencia and Monza later in that year, when McLaren and Red Bull were already coming up. So yeah. it was still a very proud year.
Well, again, be safe, look after yourself, look after the family, and I'll hope to see you soon, either in Brazil or this side of the ocean.
Okay, so be safe too. Thank you, Val, and I talk to you sometime soon.
Thank you very much, Rubens.
Ciao, ciao.
Ciao.